Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is the last show of the series, and coincidentally, the last show of 2016. It's your guide to a better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are, we're here to help you out. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And joining me, as they always do, on the line, first of all, it's the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Have I got that right, Gareth? Is it? It's just director of cricket now, is that right?
Yeah, just director of cricket, mate. It's much more simple, isn't it? Just take a few words off and then you get just director of cricket, which is great.
Simple, exactly. Yeah. And how was your Christmas? Filled with joy and mince pies?
Yeah, not so many mince pies, I have to say. The only time I could ever entertain a mince pie is if it's covered in brandy butter, which one was. So, I'm one mince pie down, and that will be my end.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, how are we doing?
Very good. How was your Christmas?
Mince pie free so far, actually. Not through choice, so just hasn't happened so far. I've eaten everything else that's been going, so don't think I've been sensible about it, but no, I've not stumbled my way towards a mince pie yet.
Okay, well, you know, there's still time. There's still time, that's the good news.
Oh, there's plenty.
Don't despair.
Absolutely.
But as it is the last show of the year, and we're looking back, as you tend to do at the end of the year, I was wondering what your sort of highlights of the year were, coaching-wise, you know, whether it's something that's, you know, personal to you or whether it's something that happened in the wider cricketing world. What kind of highlights have you got from the last year when it comes around the idea of coaching and playing cricket?
Well, one of my highlights actually isn't to do with me. It's to do with nothing to do with me at all, actually, which is Middlesex won the title. And as much as they pipped Somerset to the title, and I'd love to have seen Somerset win it for obvious biased reasons, as a guy who coaches and is a head coach at Middlesex, he takes absolutely no credit for anything in the public domain. He's a guy called Richard Scott. He was my first ever roommate and car mate when I started playing second 11 cricket for Hampshire so many years ago, back in 1991. And he used to pick me up and drop me off everywhere, and he looked after me, and he's a top man. And it's taken a while for him to come to the coaching, you know, top of a tree, really, because he wasn't even coaching many years ago. I think I started my coaching career before him. And anyway, this year Middlesex deservedly won the county championship, and he's finally getting a little bit of credit. He's a top man, Scotty. So yeah, Richard Scott's been one of my coaching highlights for me. He's done brilliant. And you know, you hear a lot about Angus Fraser and other people at Middlesex, but actually Richard Scott is the guy who's running it all, and he's done fantastically well.
Yeah, some people don't like to put their name in lights, do they? They just like to sort of get their head down, get on with things, and do the best job they can. And that's quite a taking the time to highlight people who are doing a good job and then not taking credit for it because they don't want to be in the limelight is a good thing, isn't it?
It's a really good trait, and it's one that, you know, he's had that for a long time. Even when he was a player, he was very good at projecting others rather than himself when he was playing. So it's no surprise to me that. But I just think he deserves a lot of credit because they haven't won a title since 93, and they've worked really hard over the last few years. He's been absolute cornerstone to that. But obviously, some bigger names from the playing side of things that have gone into coaching take more of a credit now, and they do a great job, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'd like to put Scotty up there as doing some great stuff in 2016 and getting the rewards.
What about you, Lavers? What springs to mind for you in cricket coaching in the last 12 months?
Well, I'm going to change mine because Scotty was going to be one of mine as someone who was a predecessor to one of my my previous jobs, actually. I was head coach of the Navy for about 3 years, probably until about 7 or 8 years ago now, probably about 8 years ago, and Scotty was in the role before me. So I followed on from him, and Gareth is right, that was actually, even though he was probably in the role from about 2005 to 2008 or something around that kind of region, that was pretty early days in his coaching career, actually. And I don't think he'd done, I think he'd done a little bit before that, but I don't think he'd done lots and lots before that. And I then followed him in there with a great group of guys, and he's done fantastically well to progress to where he is, and we've talked about that already. But he was one person I thought deserved a mention. The other thing, which is probably more of a personal note, is I was thinking about how do I look at the group of players that I've got, and what's been different, or what's impressed me in with the people I've worked with. And I think that the area that I'm particularly enjoying at the moment is the work that we're starting to do more with the girls' side of cricket. It's definitely not a big sport at our school at the moment. I know there are schools that are streets ahead, and you get the, I'm sure, Gareth, there are quite a few girls who play cricket down at Millfield, and certainly at places like Brighton College, it's a strong thing. But we've got three girls on our full-time program all year round, and working with them has been really, really enjoyable. And from my own coaching point of view, it is again a fresh air to have people who approach things very differently in some instances, have a very different desire in terms of what they're looking to achieve and how they want to go about their learning, are extremely hungry, not all of them necessarily desperate to go all the way to the top, but extremely hungry just to be as good as they are, as they can be, and really, really honest in the way they think about their cricket. And working with those three in particular, and we've got quite a few other girls who do play the game, but those three has been fantastic, and one of them's made the county side, and one's just on the fringe of England under 17 stuff, has been included in a fast bowling program with England, and the other one's in the England Academy. So it's been extremely rewarding to work with them, and great to see how committed and how good people can be at learning and improving themselves, and offering obviously a little bit of support to them, but a lot of what they do is work they've done single-handedly up until now, and is still largely due to their own commitments and their own input. So really, really enjoying having them on board, and hopefully we will see a lot more of them in the coming years.
Mine wasn't, I was going to pick one thing. It's not a specific person or a specific group of people. It's the kind of the way that things have gone towards much greater experimentation in the last year. I feel like the freedom to experiment has never been greater. Cricket is one of those games where you have a lot of people who know all of the answers all of the time. And that idea of experimenting and saying, actually, I don't know, but I'm going to try and find out, is relatively fresh in the game, I think. And yet, this year, it's really sort of moved forward. And people are I feel like generally, that certainly the people I'm around feel like that they have a lot more freedom to experiment, a lot more freedom to look into things and work things out. And whether that's doing it through their mindset or numbers, you know, statistics and data, or whether it's doing it through just getting into the nets and hitting balls and bowling balls and trying things, whatever works for them, it's a lot more. The overarching philosophy of it is, let's get out there and experiment and find out what works, what doesn't work, and push aside all those dogmas and say, okay, well, if we're starting from a completely clean slate here, where would we start? Let's forget about what we should be doing, and let's look at what actually works. And for me, that's never been greater than in the last year. That really has come through this year, I think.
Just kind of building on that, or probably on a slightly different note, but I one of the things that I've liked about the perspective that, or the way that, sorry, the way that coaching and cricket, and probably across sport a little bit as well, but is specifically within cricket, is being projected. Is I felt in the past that there were certain parts of the game which were looked down upon, and they weren't important or they were wrong, and we shouldn't teach people to whack the ball. We shouldn't teach people, we shouldn't make people be fit and strong. We shouldn't make people be too technical. And now we're getting to the stage, not where we're saying that everyone has to do all these things, but they're all having their own compartment, and being technically really strong is a really good benefit to certain people. Having that ability to whack the ball is a really good benefit to some of those people and another group of people. Being fit and strong is a really useful thing for, again, for certain people, but other people can, again, can get by without it. But I'm seeing less of people saying no to things and more of people saying yes and embracing things, and not necessarily feeling that everyone has to do everything, but we've all been there when whacking the being aggressive and whacking ball, that was a bad thing to do. You can't be doing that, especially me growing up in Yorkshire. You were told this is how you do, you're going to bat in a certain way. And then there's been this slightly more recent period of technique maybe being pushed aside a little bit, or maybe people misunderstanding it and feeling it's a bit too rigid. But again, that understanding appears to be spreading, that people have their own boxes to tick, they'll have their own things that they need to get in a certain capacity, and people seem to be backing things that coaches are doing, and backing different ways of approaching areas of cricket rather than pushing them away, and that's nice to hear. And well, I guess the standard hopefully is rising a little bit.
Okay, let's enter the last question section of the year. And the way that this works is pretty straightforward. You send in questions to us, we answer those questions, and then we choose a winner of a prize, which is the best question of the week. And it's an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. If you want to send your questions in to us, we will be accepting questions over the couple of weeks where we're away, ready for the start of the new season, the new series. So you can email coach@pitchvision.com if you want to do that. And you can also get us on social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And Samarth is the first person who's sent in a question this week. And he says, "Hey guys, one stupid question, but I have to ask. How much power do we put into a drive? If we put too much in, then the bottom hand spoils it. And if we don't put enough in, then we don't get any power. So what do we do? And how high should the bat go for a high elbow?" He's concerned about the power of his drive, I feel. What can we do for him?
Sounds like a Garraway one for me.
Well, maybe. I'll give it a go. It sounds to me that your notion, and I might be misreading this, Samarth, but your notion is that we get our power from our arms, is what I'm picking up from this, or our arms and our hands. The mention of the bottom hand putting in the power, and if they put in too much, and obviously we lose our shape or lose the bat path through the ball, or not enough and it doesn't go anywhere. And the bottom line is the best drive shots are played as a combination of a whole body movement. And if you think about, you're in your stance, you're ready to face that ball, and then you move to make contact with that ball, and all of that body weight goes through the ball, as well as the arms, as well as the bat, then all of a sudden we get a really good response. So I prefer to look at it as a whole body movement rather than just the arms and the bottom hand or the top hand doing their business. And then going on to your second bit, really, how high should the bat go through for a high elbow? Well, the benefit of having a high elbow, and when you talk about high elbows, I sort of got Sachin Tendulkar and Michael Vaughan in my head as people who demonstrated fantastic elbows going through drive shots, both front foot and back foot, actually. But the benefit of having that high elbow is the fact that the bat path stays on line with the ball for longer. And so if you contrast that to, say, a Kevin Peterson, who would often break his elbow to manoeuvre a ball and to generate power in that way, rather than hitting directly straight through the line of a ball and keeping his elbow high and the bat face on the ball for a long period of time. So again, you know, there's different ways of going about it. I actually teach nowadays players to have a go at the high elbow, whether they're somebody who bats like a KP or not, just to experience that, because often you're going to find that when you're playing drive shots, particularly at the early part of the season, or if the ball's swinging around, then the longer you can keep the bat face on the ball, the better anyway. So it's good to have that in your locker to be able to do. So high elbow is something that I'm quite keen on. However, some people can extend their elbow real high and keep their bat face going on line of the ball for a long time. But actually, some of Sachin Tendulkar's best drives were almost those straight drives, those ones that went between mid-on. Actually, the elbow didn't extend particularly high. It just stayed on the line of the ball for longer. So it was almost like a block down the ground rather than an extended drive shot down the ground. And that, to me, is also a fantastic cricket shot. So as long as the bat face stays on line with the ball, then I haven't got a problem. How high the elbow goes isn't a massive issue for me, because if the whole body is moved through the ball, then there's a good chance that there's going to be enough power to get it to the boundary. So Sachin's on drive is a classic example of the whole body moving into the ball, stabilising, and then all of that energy going up the kinetic chain, so it ends up all in the bat and all in the hands, and sometimes it looks as if he was blocking the ball to the boundary at a good rate of knots. So I wouldn't worry too much about the high elbow, but what he did do very well was keep the bat face going through the line of the ball for as long as possible. So I mean, that's my whole answer, really, is get the whole body to play the drive shot rather than the bottom hand or the top hand or your swing of your arms.
Sometimes I think, Gareth, we can find that maybe the technique or parts of the technique that are required, maybe at a slightly lower level, are actually a little bit more difficult to execute than some of the techniques required could be a little bit harder to utilize than when the conditions rather than the conditions that people play in at the highest level. And you hear what Samarth is talking about there, about how he's looking for power, and if he doesn't do it, he's got no power, and that does happen for a lot of people when they've got that bowler who I know that we both don't like, which is the guy bowling at 55, 60 miles an hour, little seamers on a soft pitch, on long grass, and all these different things that are working against the power that the batter's trying to generate. So generating power whilst retaining that shape is quite a difficult thing for some people to do, especially when they're probably not quite as highly skilled as those playing at the top level. Whereas the guys at the top level, yes, the bowler's coming through 20, 30 miles an hour faster, and it's swinging and it's very accurate, and et cetera, et cetera. But there is the pace on the ball, there's the pace on the pitch, there's the pace of the outfield. There are some areas that work for them and some areas that work against them. So you can understand that some of these guys who maybe do play at a slightly lower level of cricket, it can be really tough for them to transfer what they see on a television, I suppose, and put them into their local game of club cricket, of school cricket, of pub cricket, whatever it would be.
Oh yeah, you see that a lot with the younger guys. You know, you're helping them with their drives, and they work on that hard, and then they go out and play a game and they play a beautiful drive, and it just trickles out for none. And then the next time they think, right, I've had enough of this, and they try and heave one, and it goes over mid-wicket for four, and they think, oh, well, there you go, that's what's given me the better outcome here. So you can understand why it's difficult to get that when the power is, especially with the younger kids, slower pitches, slower bowlers, the power isn't there, and you're sort of having to make an investment in the future rather than get a lot from it early on.
Yeah, no, I get all of that, and I think it's a really good point that you make, Sam. And again, I'm going to go to the top end of the game here, but Matthew Hayden was unbelievably good when the pitch was slow. He was bloody good or when the pitch was quick, but when the pitch was slow, most top-level players struggled because the conditions weren't what they were used to, whereas he used to thrive. And one of the things that he used to do was walk at the opposition bowlers coming at him. Even if the keeper was up sometimes, he'd walk straight down the middle of a wicket, and all he was aiming to do was to get himself into a normal position for a drive shot, but further down the pitch, and also with more of his momentum going through the ball. So again, he was using that whole body principle rather than just using the arms. But what he was adding to it was a little bit of momentum and getting his mass going through the ball even more than if he stood at the crease. And it was something that set him apart. And we used to fancy ourselves against Australia when the pitch was a bit slow, because obviously they were used to the ball coming on and Ricky Ponting and various others would hit on the up and what have you. But the only guy who I felt that was really likely to take us to bits on those slower decks, particularly in the early part of the season in one day international cricket, was likely to be Matthew Hayden. He was absolutely phenomenal at it because he kept the principles that I talked about earlier, but he applied them probably in more of a club way than the other guys, by literally just slowly walking towards the bowler and applying his mass and his momentum through it. But it's that whole body thing, and it's a good drill to do, you know, to just get that idea and the notion of the all of your body weight going through a ball, is to actually do that in a net practice, just to walk down, you know, rather than legging it down the wicket and running down the wicket, which we see so many people doing. Just walking down and applying their weight going through the back of a cricket ball is a really useful thing to do.
I've actually seen and worked with quite a few of our guys over the last 18 months who've started to almost apply that, or the Jonathan Trott approach, in terms of getting momentum back at the bowler as their norm now. And yes, they're aware that if someone's very fast and bowling on a quick deck, it might put them under pressure in a different way, but they're playing to the percentages of the conditions and the standard they're going to be in, and they found that extra momentum and just retaining that shape but getting that mass and that weight through the ball, as you've said there, Gareth, has actually really helps them in the conditions that they play the majority of their cricket. And if they go up another level and up another level, maybe it's something they'll have to readdress, but for the cricket they're playing at the moment, probably six or seven guys now out of the winter program are finding that as a default method works really, really well for them.
Yeah, there's not many levels where a good drive is not a good option, is there? So if you can do it, it's a matter of tweaking things for the level you're at rather than anything major. So yeah, it's probably the first thing you're going to learn when you're batting. So you know, get it nailed and move on. Next question is from Yuvraz, and Yuvraz says, what is shadow bowling, and what is the benefit of this? It's another jargon buster, Gareth.
It is, and that's why I'm going to chuck it straight over to Sam.
Well, he did start with sir, so
yeah, that's why I thought it wasn't for me, mate, I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, unless they're in year seven, I don't get sir very often. Well, shadow bowling, I mean, for me, and this again, this is everyone's interpretation of a phrase, and other people may have a different perception of what this means. For me, shadow batting would be practicing grooving those shots without the introduction of a ball, probably, and it's getting a bit of repetition and getting a bit of feel for positions that you're looking to get into and ways of moving your body and in a batting situation your bat through a particular shot, and for bowling I would consider it the same way as a bit of rehearsal without necessarily bowling a ball. It might be that you have a ball in your hand but you don't necessarily bowl it, but having throughout that, having an awareness of the positions you're striving to get into, and hopefully being able to, I mean, sometimes this is the kind of thing that a lot of us will have done, and I can bet I've done it thousands of times. Gareth will have done it thousands of times. I reckon Dave still does it thousands of times. He's standing in front of a mirror and practicing a shot with a bat, or practicing bowling, or maybe a bit of keeping and footwork or whatever it might be. But again, that gives that a little bit of extra feedback to the positions you're getting into. And for me, that is the that is how I would perceive shadow bowling. And now, where does that fit into the process? Well, if we're thinking about that reverse chaining of going from something very, very simple to something very complicated at the top end, this is going to be a pretty low-level activity. However, for a lot of people, probably quite an important one, because it's an opportunity to try and get some repetitions in a really controlled environment, and also in an environment where you don't necessarily need a cricket pitch or a net or an indoor centre or any of that kind of stuff. It can be done around the house. So it's a good opportunity to get some good repetitions in away from the training or the cricket environment. And it's also a chance where you can experiment and really have some control over the way you want to move. From there, obviously, it's building it back up of introducing a ball or adding a bit more impetus or pace to the way you're moving. So you could even be shadow bowling from a stationary position and feeding that into a walk, into a jog, before you then introduce the ball and do the same kind of thing. But something that you'd probably be doing to either reinforce a movement that you've got or you're unsure of, or maybe to relearn or learn something new that you want to add to the way you bowl, or you want to change in the way you bowl, and that would be how I'd consider it.
Steph Jones has done a lot of work taking this sort of beyond just sort of practicing in the mirror and doing stuff with resistance bands and getting people into different positions to help with the fast bowling action and getting into those powerful positions. Those four tent pegs idea that Ian Pont has come up with all those years ago and is still passing on to new people, and it's a great model to work from, those four tent pegs. So it's something which is, I mean, it's, you know, it's old fashioned in some ways. You look at the old photos of boys lined up in gyms in the 1950s and a coach standing there while they all practice their bowling action. But it's also extremely modern and extremely fresh because, you know, some of the more cutting edge coaches are doing great work with it as well.
Yeah, that's certainly the way I looked at it when the question came through. I think when we take things back into a shadow scenario, it's more a reactive thing, isn't it? I would say, whereas bowling is proactive. So if I think back to shadow boxing, for example, you'll have people mirroring the things that they're going to do in a contest against somebody. So they'll be mirroring their punches, but they'll be mirroring their blocks, they'll be mirroring all of their sort of movements that they're looking to do with an opponent. And often when they're doing that stuff, they've got an opponent in mind. So they're actually running through what that opponent's going to do to them, so then they can react off the back of it. So a lot of visualization element goes into that. And the same when we stand in front of a mirror and do batting, shadow batting, we're often visualizing the person that's going to be bowling at us and the way that they're going to bowl at us, so we can then start to practice specifically. Now the difference here is that when we do the shadow bowling, you know, which is it's a new term to me, I'll be brutally honest with you, it's not one that I've used, but when we're doing shadow bowling, because bowling is a proactive element, it's a starting point of a game of cricket, it's the thing that puts the ball into play, I, instead of going to the visualization element of it, which you'd get with shadow boxing and shadow batting, I'm thinking more along the lines of the things that Steph's been doing and doing some great work on, and it's more about isolating actions really, in order to then to build up that repetition base, just as you say. So when you start to then put in momentum, when you start to put a weighted ball or a normal ball or an underweighted ball in there, that your body is ready and used to getting into those positions. You know, the resistance band work, I think, is fantastic stuff. The weighted ball work is fantastic stuff. And all of that is what I perceive shadow bowling to be, as well as getting into those four tent peg positions, which, you know, are one of the fundamental elements of bowling actions. And, you know, I was in India a couple of weeks ago, and there was a guy bowling in a net, and I knew exactly where he got his stimulus from. You know, he got his stimulus for bowling in the way that he did from the Ian Pont stuff,
And also from looking at Steph's stuff online. So a lot of it is based around doing those positions, also then putting some resistance and overloading into it to be able to then do it once you get into actually bowling at somebody or bowling at target. So that's my perception of it. But shadow to me is about reaction stuff rather than necessarily the proactive element to it.
And that is the end of this show and the end of this series for 2016 on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Before we leave, we're just going to do one more thing, which is to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions available to win the prize are Sam's question about putting power into the drive and Yuvraz's question about shadow bowling. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Samath's one. I just think, you know, hopefully he's got an idea that the drive is more based around a whole body movement. Again, it's kinetic chain stuff. It's being able to make that step to set a base to kick off that kinetic chain where eventually all of that pace is in your hands. And then hopefully there won't be so much need to get that bottom hand in to get the ball to go to the fence, because the combination of all of those big muscle parts going into small muscle parts will get the ball there for you anyway, mate. So fingers crossed for you, and you've won the course this week.
Congratulations to you. And if there is someone else listening, Gareth, who also wants to win that prize, it's going to be a couple of weeks before we're back on the virtual air. But if they wanted to send in their question in advance of that, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also get us through social media. You can find us on the Pitch Vision social media pages. Or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Or you can go to Twitter @PitchVisionAcad. We'll still be available all the way through the next couple of weeks via social media. If you want to listen to this show every week, you can subscribe for free just by going to your favourite podcast catching app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. Tap on subscribe. It comes out every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, listen to previous shows to get you through the next couple of weeks, or catch up on some of the old ones, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. You'll get all the previous shows in there. Now, that's all for this week and all for this year. We hope you listen next year. But until then, cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas. Happy New Year.
Cheers, guys.